This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Wow, I cannot believe. Final show of the year. Yay. Guys, can you believe it?
Wow.
2 weeks ago, we couldn't find enough chairs to put people in the studio, and this week it's just the three of us. Exactly. So I'm in studio with Lawrence and Martin. How are you doing, guys?
How's it,
Yeah, lekker, man. Lekker.
Great.
All good. Fantastic weekend, and yeah, December's here. The roads are quiet.
No.
Well, we had a little bit of a truck accident.
Still took me an hour and a half to cover 50Ks.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, but I suppose you're coming from far, so there's still a lot of people haven't stopped work yet. But in terms of the mornings for me, like school run and stuff like that, the traffic. And we have been joined by George. Hi, George.
Can you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Just going to stick you on there.
Thought you were still in Cape Town.
No, I was standing talking to somebody out the back, yeah. Actually, Gareth, to be honest.
So you're in. You're not going to Cape Town anymore.
Yeah, I know you guys thought I was in Cape Town today, but I'm going later on today.
Okay, all right. Maybe that's where the confusion came from. All right, fantastic. Well, yeah, guys, let's get straight into it. And I don't know if... Can you imagine being a truck driver where you're spending 17, 20 hours... You know,
I had a family member who was a long distance truck driver.
And how did
his truck was his house. He told me stories about how he used to make sandwiches on a breadboard while
he was driving.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I suppose, you know, whether you're repping or you're driving a truck and you're spending a lot of time in the car, your car does become essentially your home. And it can also become quite a lonely place, I suppose, if you're doing long distance, you know, travel. And I see the UK's van operators are battling loneliness by taking their dogs on the road with them. So there's a company that's got over 200,000 van drivers, and these guys all just take their dogs with them on these trips. And what's interesting about the article is the percentages in terms of how much happier these guys are now that they're taking their canine companions with them on these trips.
Driving from Joburg to Bloemfontein, it's only 3 hours, but that 3 hours goes really, really quickly when you actually have somebody to talk to.
Yes.
When there's company in the vehicle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that 3 hours feels like nine.
Yeah. And it's even better if you don't, if there's no risk of an argument.
No risk of an argument.
And this dog can't talk back.
Exactly.
If you get sick and tired, you just stop and chuck him out the window.
So essentially, those that take their dogs with them throughout the work, they say they feel much happier. 52% of them said that. 45% said they felt more relaxed. And a third, so 33%, say their dog simply helps them to get through their day. And I suppose that's like anybody, you know. If you've got a dog, that can make your life a little bit easier.
As long as it's a well-behaved dog.
Yeah, and you don't have to clean up after all the time.
It doesn't get car sick.
Yeah. But I mean, I've never seen... I don't know if our truck drivers are taking dogs with them on trips.
I've seen trucks with teddy bears in the windows, but...
That's about it.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a story coming out of the UK there. We chatted 2 weeks ago about you know, the issues that have hit Nissan. Just help a car with Carlos. Was it
Goen.
I actually watched the video the other day, and there was no S in the pronunciation of his surname. But Nissan plans to conduct another recall. So I don't know, remember last year, well, earlier on this year, there was a recall for some Nissan cars because the guys hadn't, you know, in terms of them checking their levels of standards.
Irregularities in the testing procedures.
And I see this is happening again now. So Nissan plans to conduct another recall owing to improper tests on the new vehicles. A newspaper reported on Thursday, dealing with a fresh blow to the Japanese car giant, obviously after the arrest of their chairman. The latest issue was uncovered after Transport Ministry officials conducted on-site inspections at Nissan's major assembly plants. Several employees admitted that they carried out improper tests on brake and other systems before shipment. So they're obviously not testing all of their vehicles. I mean, that's just crazy if you think about
Shortcuts.
It.
Shortcuts.
Yeah, but I mean, why do that? Do you think it's just do you think people... I mean, listen, we're all creatures of habit, right? We become lazy, don't we?
Well, This story is actually older than you think. I see now, I actually reported on this last year already, October.
Was this the same one though?
That this was the start of the whole thing,
yeah.
Where improperly qualified engineers were tasked with certifying the cars as they came off the production line.
Correct.
And this thing is just now blown and grown up and grown bigger and...
blown out of proportion.
Yep.
But I mean... you know, in this day and age, surely, and if you have a look at the number of lives that we lose on the roads, you would think that this would become kind of be like a massive, massive priority for any manufacturer. But
to be honest, I think all manufacturers take shortcuts at some point in the production line. The problem is Nissan specifically is really under the microscope at the moment, and vehicle testing from the OEMs are... really being investigated closely by all, well, everyone,
yeah.
Really, especially following the Volkswagen Dieselgate thing.
Yeah.
So if there's any kind of irregularity, the people will pick up on this.
Mm.
And the fact that Nissan allowed this to continue is actually a bit shocking.
I mean, do they have to test every single car? Do you test every single vehicle, or do you, like, you know, you're putting 30 cars
they
through
generally
in a run,
take
do you
test a test
the batch
sample,
or
yeah,
test
a
sample,
random,
like,
test sample.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it's impossible to test every year, every car. But yeah, bring on electric cars. Won't have the problem.
Then the
less testing.
The system would be able to test itself, right?
Well, I mean, you've got less parts to test. You've got, you know, you've got to test brakes, obviously. You've got to test whether the motors are working, acceleration, you know,
yeah,
reverse, what all, you know, all the functions of the car.
Mm.
But there's a lot less to test in an electric car,
yeah,
all software based, basically.
Yeah.
You know, you can the software,
the USB port.
Yeah, the software can tell you if something's wrong.
Because I mean, you use what, like 52 components or something crazy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it depends on which electric car,
exactly,
but you know, anywhere under 200, 250, yeah, which
yeah,
is 10 times less than an
yeah,
ICE car.
I know this is completely off the topic, but why are you so tanned?
Why am I so tanned?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Looks like you've been on. It looks like you've just
I'm
come back
already.
From holiday.
I'm on holiday.
Are
already,
you?
Yeah.
Are you on leave officially?
No, I'm not.
Not yet.
I wish
just
I was.
See. No, like you walked in, I was like, hang on a sec, yeah. I've just been on the beach.
Well, yeah, I have been in Durban.
Are you in Durban last week?
Yeah, I was in Durban last
That's
week.
Right.
The sun's
yeah,
hot there.
It's very hot there. Very hot. VW's next generation of petrol and diesel cars will be its last, to your point. So I see Volkswagen say that it's begin rolling out its last generation of combustion engine cars. Well, it will be in 2026. It's the last green pledge as it looks to turn the corner on the Dieselgate emissions cheating scandal. The carmaker said it would phase out its diesel and petrol cars as it looks to meet the emissions target of the 2015 Paris climate deal by 2050, which is a long, 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 long way away. Yeah, these guys obviously have got a line in the sand, and we know that electric's the future, and they're now obviously working on the last batch or the last run of engines that use petrol or diesel.
Well, so if their last batch is 2025,
yeah,
or 2026, you know, then you're probably going to sit with ICE-engined cars on the road for another 10-15
years
after that. So, you know, we're looking at 2040 before we've got electric VWs on the road predominantly.
Yes. Yeah, well, they'll outweigh the
that being
the
said,
ICE
we
cars.
may start seeing them a lot sooner than what we think.
You reckon?
Yeah.
And do you think they're going to do that to all their brands? I mean, because they've got Seat,
it's
Skoda, Audi, Porsche, Lamborghini, and Bentley.
All the European marks are going to be in this boat.
Mm.
Well, just to add on to this, yes, they're rolling out their last generation, or they'll start rolling out their last generation, and that will be completed by 2026.
Mm.
But that will still remain in production for markets where charging infrastructure isn't properly developed.
Like here?
Yeah. So, sorry, George, but I don't think your 2040 is entirely realistic for our conditions.
In Europe, yes. In South Africa, maybe not.
No. Yeah, you'll be surprised. I find South Africa kind of gain momentum faster than other countries in a lot of instances. You know, look at fiber. Fiber hit first world countries. Fiber to the home hit first world countries, and we were 10 years behind everybody. A couple of years later, fiber to the home. started.
Yeah.
You know, so we, when we do jump on the bandwagon, the nice thing is we can learn from international markets, because they go through the learning process. They get the infrastructure wrong. They have to change it. Mm. They have to fix it. And then when we come along, we're like, oh, okay, we'll have that.
And we'll just take the best of whatever
We know how to do that. Yeah, I mean, look at the Gautrain.
Yeah.
Underground trains have been around in America and London forever.
Yeah.
And we just took all that and thought, well, let's build the best train.
And I see they are rolling out more lines now which is really, really nice to know. I think the big question here, though, is are we going to have enough coal to supply the power stations to put the electricity into our homes so that we can charge our cars?
An alternative has to be produced there as well, hey?
Yeah.
You know, we can't run on fossil fuels forever.
No.
It has to come. Everybody's doom and gloom about, this will never happen. It will change. Of course
I think it will change. I think there's enough people, especially in South Africa, that, you know, I find South Africans are very much like, when you get to a point where the shit really hits the fan, enough people like, go, okay, hang on a sec.
Mm.
You know?
Enough already.
Thing is, though, South Africa has other problems to contend with first. Unfortunately, clean energy comes a bit further down the line.
But
that's sad. But
yeah, but there's a lot of good stuff happening. Let's be honest. Stay at the Waldorf and drive an Aston Martin. Now, I've never stayed at the Waldorf. I don't know if any of you have ever stayed at a Waldorf.
No, but I have driven an Aston Martin.
Okay, well, there we go. So you're halfway there. But Aston Martin have actually paired up with the Waldorf. Waldorf Hotel Group, and basically if you go and stay at a Waldorf hotel, you can arrange to have an Aston Martin as your kind of little runaround for the time of your stay.
But if you can afford to stay at a Waldorf, you are not driving yourself anywhere. Well, you are being chauffeured in a limousine.
The thing is, an Aston Martin is the car to signal to all the onlookers that you have already arrived before you arrive.
Driving it.
Yeah.
You might want to.
No, I don't know.
I'd probably drive it.
Rich playboys.
Yeah, I mean, they can drive it. I think sound like kind of marketing. If you think about anybody that's staying at a Waldorf, as long as you're putting bums in seats, and if they're putting them into Aston Martins, I mean, that's really, really nice. So
could have been a Bentley, or could have been a Rolls or a Maserati.
Exactly.
Now it's Aston Martin.
Yeah, so the Waldorf is actually the most elite hotel in the Hilton hotel group. And if you book a drive in the British automakers' latest, like the DB11, the DBS Superleggera, or the Vantage, you can only stand to help, Gate and get its products in front of its target audience. But that's obviously about staying at the Waldorf. So that was quite different. We did a thing back in the day with the Mount Nelson in Cape Town and Jaguar, but you don't see this a lot at hotels. Hotels offering car packages or driving packages.
No, I mean, okay. The Saxon Hotel here in Joburg, when you park your car in the parking lot, they've got Mercedes-Benz cars that shuttle you up and down. I think they use those outside of the hotel as well. Yeah. So there are hotels who go over the top. I mean, it's a 100-meter walk.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I know the Beverly Hills, they do that. I mean, a lot of the fancy hotels do that, but I don't think they actually, like, you know, share the keys.
I went to meet somebody there the other day.
Give me a golf cart with that isn't limited.
Oh, you mean a Tesla?
There's the stand.
Shots
fired. lovely.
Right, Tesla's going to take over the world.
They are going to take over the world. So that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it is. I went to the Saxon Hotel the other day to go and meet with someone, and they drove me to the hotel front door with the Merc, but then when I left, I said to the guy, no, it's all right, thanks. I'll just walk. It's all right.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people with lots of money get very lazy. I don't know what happens. They change.
Yeah.
Talking about being lazy, Ford patents a cargo loading conveyor belt, and it says you're four lazy Americans. So the Ford Motor Company clearly has a fairly hefty development budget and a lot of idle time on its hands. How else would you explain its patent for a detachable rear wheel that turns into an electric unicycle, or perhaps the cylindrical vehicle compartment that looks like a dining room on wheels? Anyway, this particular patent application is for something that could actually be a really useful tool. It's the cargo loading conveyor belt, or as it's officially called, the third row conveyor load floor. So if you can imagine, you're standing at your car, you open your boot, you've now put your back seats down, and you have got a conveyor belt on both seats so that you don't have to stretch to put your shopping into the back of your car. You can just, you know, put it right by the tailgate and then the conveyor belt will take it in. I can't.
I can sort of understand. Have you ever seen the size of an F-250?
Yeah, listen, okay.
F-350D.
Yeah, okay.
Listen, those things are big.
Or an Explorer or anything of that sort.
The tailgate on that car is level with my shoulders.
Well, let's just put this in context. American cars are bigger than
most cars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I can understand this. You know, and look at the Ford pickup truck.
Yeah, and the load bay is very deep as well, and it's high. And then also, apparently, most Americans are overweight, so they can't really stretch that far.
Have you seen some South Africans?
Oh, well, yeah, so I drive past the Metro Police every day.
So you can get your wife into the boot. I just put her on the conveyor belt and ship it to the
This isn't a completely new idea. I remember Saab around the turn of the century in the 9-5 estate. They actually had a roll-out tray in the floor of the boot space. So you literally pack, well, you pull this tray out.
Outside.
You pack it on the outside and then and you just push it in.
Oh, wow, that's clever.
Yeah.
So this is just a different take on the same kind of idea.
I just don't know why. I mean, you know, if you look at the diagram here, it's not doesn't look like the biggest car. You could just open the back seats and put the shopping in.
Well, but isn't that why traditionally you had the big rolling door on the side?
Yes,
it's easy to get stuff in.
Yeah, like a rolling door, like a combi.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're also dealing with a culture with drive-through banks and pharmacies and bottle stores, so.
Don't even have to get out of your car.
Exactly.
Do you think it's more just a convenience thing? Do you think that's what the Americans are about? The Americans are all exactly about just making everything as convenient as possible.
Hey, I mean, let's be honest. If you could make something more convenient, you would, right?
Especially if you're going to make money out of it, right?
Well, no, I mean, if you could, if you're sitting on your couch watching the rugby and, you know, you could have a robot bring you a beer, I've got two of them.
One's 10 and one's 8.
Exactly. There's more convenient.
and it's actually quite cool because I got a nephew now who's 2 years old. I arrived at my sister's house yesterday.
So they got him doing stuff.
The first thing he said to me without anybody saying anything was like, "Ty, want beer?" I was like, "Yes," but then he did. He went and got me one. I was like, cool, you're learning. But
Trained well from a young age,
yeah. Well, listen, I think what goes around comes around. I remember fetching beers for my dad, so it's time that we, you know, you pass it down the line. All right. Oné wrote a really, really nice article about, and we know that obviously the holidays are here, and a lot of people are going to be on the roads. We spoke about the vehicle checks that you can do and taking your, I think it's actually, I saw an advert, I think Super Quick are also doing free vehicle checks now, which is really, really nice. So hats
off
to them.
Most of the tyre chains have some form of
safety check that they can do for you. But this article is on our site, and Oné wrote this, and it's how to ensure you and your family's safety on the road. Well, how do you ensure that you guys are safe on the road this festive season? So I thought we'll just touch through the 10 points that that she's put down here. And I think the first thing she says is have a chat to your kids to remind them of the dangers of wandering off, especially when stopping at busy service stations to refuel. Don't allow your children to go into the bathroom without adults or, you know, an older sibling. We know that kidnappings and stuff happen, and they have become commonplace in South Africa. So when you add a one stop, whatever it is, just make sure that your kids are safe. I mean, you got kids. I don't let mine out of my sight. I'm actually quite hesitant when they, because you also want them to be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Independent.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, where do you draw the line? But I think going into places like that, you've got to make sure that you're with them all the time and keep your eyes on them.
Yeah, I mean, ours is 11, and you know, going on holiday now, I won't let her out of my sight. It doesn't matter that she's 11. I mean, she can scream, scratch, bite, kick. She's you know, she's big, but
absolutely, she's still not big enough.
Still not big enough to resist. You know. Yep. An unscrupulous individual.
Absolutely. So that's the first thing. Give your children a lecture. Let them know that you're in charge and they're there to listen. Right. Second thing is put your kids in their car seats that are suitable for their age, height, and their weight. And ensure that the older kids are buckled up. And that they obviously, when you're putting on a seatbelt, I know a lot of children don't like to sit with the seatbelt over their chest. They put it behind their back, which is obviously
futile.
Adults do that as well.
Which is crazy. Because, I mean, that's not the part of the seatbelt that's going to save you. The one that's over your waist, right? It's the chest strap that's...
Well, they have to work in tandem.
Work in tandem. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And you get seatbelt padding, so you get those Velcro things you can put over the seatbelt to make it more comfortable and stuff. Yeah, but don't put it behind your back.
Don't put it behind your back, absolutely. What did
you say? Well, some people whose front seats, beep when you don't have a seatbelt on, stick the seatbelt and then sit on it. Well, that's even worse.
That is also crazy. Arne goes on to say this is in point three. Let all the children obviously sit in the front. Don't put small, but I think kids should just be in the back of the car anyway.
Hmm.
Kids that are upwards of even of 8 years of age should still be in a car seat.
A booster seat in the back.
A booster seat, yeah, or a car seat. Yep. Because obviously, the seatbelt's going to still cause them damage, and their height and their weight and everything, they
become like a projectile.
Yeah.
If you're in an accident, they're so small that they just fly all over the place.
It's crazy. They literally slip through between the
seatbelts and
then fly through the windscreen.
Volvo built that thing for the dog. If you want to take your dog away with you, where the dog's actually strapped in, harnessed.
I've actually seen crash test footage where an unsecured passenger in the back and even an unsecured child was used as a crash test dummy.
Yeah,
was used to demonstrate how important it is to buckle up everyone in the car.
Mm.
So the front passenger was
buckled
in, but the one behind him wasn't. And the impact, the momentum, the energy inherent in this crash literally flung the back seat occupant, collapsed the front seat, and connected with the front seat occupant. So even if it's a child, keep them buckled
down. I mean, if you think about it, our Cheyenne weighs 30-something kilos.
Okay.
That's a heavy weight to be flung on.
And if that weight is moving at 110 or so kilometers an hour, do you think you're going to catch it?
No, you wouldn't voluntarily stand and take a 30-kilo sandbag.
Nope.
Falling from the sky at 120 k's an hour. But you think, cool, well, it's fine. Because I'm in the car and I'm moving forward, if I have a... You don't understand.
And there's something else, and that's one of my pet peeves, is the people who keep their child or their children, they try to hold them in their laps on the front seats.
No,
it's even worse now with front airbags.
Yeah.
Because the child is essentially loose. There's no way you're going to be able to hold on to that child.
Yeah.
There's no way.
In the event of an accident.
I mean, when I was a kid, the seat belts, I don't think were... They were just being... Rolled out in cars.
Exactly.
We used to be all over that car during a road trip. Mm-hmm. And
I used to lay on the partial shelf.
Yes, I laid on the partial shelf as well. Yeah. And you don't realize how dangerous that was, especially with cars with no safety equipment in those days.
Absolutely crazy. It was always fun to sit in the boot because then you got flung around a bit.
Everyone in the car is like strapped in, car seat.
But you say that there are still a lot of people that you just drive out. We'll drive back to the office just now. You'll see people without. I actually had an argument with a guy on the side of the road. Well, we were stopped at a robot together, and this kid was standing on the front seat. Windows were down. He had a seatbelt on, and I turned to him and I said, "But hang on a sec." And he's like, "Yeah, but the child doesn't want to wear a seatbelt." And I said to him,
"Well, does it matter?
Who's the parent here?" He's like, but he shouts. I'm like, "Well, okay, that's fine." When duct tape is
much cheaper than a funeral policy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you spot on, Martin. You know what? And you don't want to go there with somebody. You don't want to talk about what ifs. But I don't think these people
realize
that.
The worst is when they say, "Yeah, but I drive carefully." Sure, possibly you do.
Yeah, but
what about the 99% of idiots on the road around you?
You're not driving,
Exactly.
Exactly.
So please, buckle everyone down. And the same applies for the next point, loose items.
Yeah, loose items. Well, tell us a bit about that. I mean, a cell phone.
Let me tell you a story. This couple got married. This was, 15 years ago. This couple got married, and they went on a road trip. I think it was to Durban, on honeymoon. And he was driving. She was in the passenger seat. She had an apple. She didn't like skin on the apple, so she had a pocket knife.
Oh gosh,
pocket knife, and she was peeling this apple. They had a car accident. The knife killed her.
Obviously stabbed her.
Yeah.
Well, beginning of last year, I had a fairly major accident, which involved, among other things, a rollover, and my phone was lying on a shelf behind the gear lever, between the gear lever and the handbrake. And somewhere along the line, I picked up a black eye. I couldn't figure out where or why, and a big cut above my left eye. And when one of the paramedics picked up my phone at the crash site, it turns out that there was some hair and skin from my eye stuck inside the phone's frame.
Jeez,
phone became a projectile.
Your phone, and it's an old iPhone 5. It became a projectile.
Yeah, you see, you got to be very, very careful. Like, we don't think like this, do we? No. I almost think that when you go and get a car, once you've done your license, they should show you a video of crash test dummies.
Yeah.
You know?
We dumb humans. We'll forget.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe we should start using some dumb humans as crash test dummies.
Don't even. No.
Lock your vehicle more than once. Obviously, remote jamming. I mean, you know. Mm. So just. I don't know. It's a natural thing for me. Yeah. I always just make sure the car's.
Yeah, but you can't always, because in a car with keyless entry
yeah,
you when you touch the handle, it unlocks itself.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can see if your car's locked.
Yeah,
You know,
generally something like the mirrors would fall down, it would give a visible blip from the indicators or something.
It's not difficult to bypass that. Is if you've got more than one passenger in the car, walk away from the car, because all you need is about five paces away from the car and get someone else to pull the handle. Mm. You know, then the car won't recognize the key.
So just make sure that you lock your car properly. Get enough rest. Obviously, that's a given. You don't want to be driving. You don't want to be drinking.
Don't overdose on Red Bull. It makes you feel alive, but actually it dulls your responses.
And the new law about weed, it's not transportable.
No, it's not.
So don't go. I can see this happening with people over this Christmas season.
No, but
I'm in my private car, and they're going to get arrested because they got weed in their car, and it's not going to go down well.
Yep.
Watch.
Stay off your phone. That's obviously don't talk and drive unless you've got a Bluetooth kit, or you know, just stick your headphones in, man. It's you know, worst case scenario there, and then obviously, you know, stick to the speed limit. I think you find
and be defensive.
Yes, be a very defensive driver.
Be patient. South African drivers during the holiday period on the freeways are incredibly impatient. Mm. You're not going to get to your destination 10 minutes faster by pushing some guy into the yellow line or overtaking on a blind rise on a solid line.
Someone said to me once, I'd rather be an hour late than 25 years too early.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm. And think about it. That goes out specifically to all people who will be using the N3 between Joburg and Durbs.
Or between Pietermaritzburg and Kokstad.
Yeah, well, I think any road, guys, if you think about it. And I don't know, like, we grew up in a household where my dad always said to us, you know, once you're in the car and you've driven out the gate, the holiday started. You're already on holiday.
Yeah, so just
very
take time.
Simple take philosophy. Time.
Exactly.
Understand that everyone around you will be an idiot and drive accordingly.
Yeah, yeah. Be defensive. Watch what's happening.
Let them go.
Yeah, let them go.
Yeah.
Just talking about that. Onay obviously got. She's obviously the safety guru in our environment, but I see she did another article on drinking and driving, and how much is too much. And we're not going to talk about this for too long, but essentially, if you weigh more than 70 kilograms, you are allowed 1 unit of alcohol every hour. That's it.
So the thing about alcohol is it only gets metabolized at a particular rate. Okay.
And that's a consistent rate.
It's consistent rate.
Okay.
Your body does not metabolize alcohol at a faster rate. So once you've drunk alcohol, you think, oh, I'll drink water or I'll eat food, or it doesn't help, because your body will only metabolize that alcohol at a particular pace. So the more you drink, all that you extend is the time to sober.
Correct.
Because the pace at which you metabolize is consistent.
Yeah.
So don't think for a second you can have two or three beers. Oh, I'll have a couple of a couple of waters or a meal.
Or a couple of coffees.
Or a couple of coffees and I'll be fine. Your body hasn't metabolized that stuff. So be very careful with alcohol and the myth that you can recover quicker. You can't. It's impossible.
Nothing you can do.
Yeah. So what your body does with alcohol is everything else's metabolism stops and it metabolizes the alcohol first. So that's one benefit, is it will metabolize the alcohol first, but then it takes, it's a consistent rate that it metabolizes at. Some people are different to others, but you can't speed that up.
Sure.
So the simple thing is, even though we've given sort of like a rough guideline, whatever, don't drink and drive.
Yeah. Full
if you
stop.
Are going to a year-end function, if you're going to a birthday party, a Christmas party, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just don't drink if you know you are going to be getting in your car.
Yep. Yeah.
We have got Taxify, Uber. You've got designated drivers. You know that there's, if the office is going, every you know, you put six people in one car.
Exactly.
One person is the designated. It just don't do it. It is not worth your life. It is not worth the prison sentence, and it is not worth, you know, ending your or somebody else's life.
Absolutely.
Just
don't do it. Obviously, there's no more F1. That's all wrapped up. But I saw something here. It's autonomous races, and they're saying that they could surpass F1, and I thought that might make for interesting.
What's the point?
I don't know. So
who's this they?
Who are these people?
No, so what I'm saying is like
Robo Race.
Robo Race CEO Lucas Degrassi shares a demo of his company's autonomous F1 racer. The Formula E champion and Formula One driver explains how they are slowly making strides in becoming faster and more efficient.
What a lot of crap. Because half of the fun is the driver.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
This is such a lot of crack at it.
But do you think you could watch, you know, this, 15 this, electric no, this cars that are autonomous
no,
racing.
No, man. No. Like, you might as well go and play Sky Electrics.
You that's might as well turn on DSTV and watch, and watch Robo
know,
Wars.
Guys, I disagree with you. Because this will take the human element out of it.
Exactly.
And they're saying that the cars are like maybe 5 or 10% away from actually being faster than a human driver.
Who cares? Whoop, whoop.
But what about... So, think about... Okay, just hang on a second. Give me my 2 seconds here. You got these 15 cars, okay? They're obviously all programmed differently. They're programmed to do different stuff. They've got AI. They're learning as they're going, whatever it is. Do you not think...
You hit a button and autopilot.
No, but that car is going to obviously try and race another car. I mean, listen, if it becomes 15 cars that are always in the first, you know, in the same...
So eventually, the other cars are going to realize and then the only way to win is to take the other cars out. Because the AI is going to like...
I'm going to crash. So I don't know. Like, oh, I think it would make for exciting racing.
I think this Robo Race demo CEO Lucas Degrassi needs to go and relook his thinking. Yeah,
because purely as a demonstration. Yeah. It's like drone racing. It's cool. You can get a drone to fly through a course, a preset course. It's what you do. But you still have somebody that's piloting it.
Yeah, but hang on a sec. We sit here and we say that because we've grown up in the eras that we've grown up in. These guys, I mean, look at esports. Esports is completely, you know, and well, yes, there's human involvement. Okay. I know that. But
it's a human.
But it's not a sport, though. Esports is not sport. Sport for me is when you actually physically play a sport. Playing a TV game is not a sport.
Fair enough.
You might be racing, but you're not playing a sport, but they are getting thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Hey, eyelid inspection is a sport.
This
sleeping on the couch.
This autonomous racer thing, it's finally a chance for computer nerds and programmers to shine at a sport, apparently.
There we go. Think about it like that as well.
I don't think it'll take off. I don't think.
No, I agree with Lauren.
We need the pomp and ceremony of
a human.
And not only that.
You need to. So you can't support
whatever,
a car.
Man. We're going to have 25 Apple Macs lined up as the grid girls, you know, with code on them or whatever it is.
This is going pear shaped.
I don't know. So I don't know.
Autonomous.
Look, I don't think anything will beat a human driving a car because that's where it is a sport. Whereas if you've got 15 cars racing, right, that's not a sport because it doesn't have a human in it, right?
Well, you know, the thing about a sport is it's one team against another of human beings, one a person against another, a human being. You know, one machine against the other.
Or is it the people?
Rock'em sock'em robots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Robo Wars.
This is actually look, beyond my. This is my beyond my realm of imagination that could be fun.
It's impressive to see.
Pointless.
Yeah, well, it's impressive to see that a computer program can be faster around the track. But Audi and BMW, amongst others, have already proven this with road cars with autonomous driving features.
That they will be quicker than drivers
around the track.
It's a no-brainer that the AI is going to be faster.
Exactly,
it's a no-brainer. So now you've got, you know, 14 fast AIs.
Yeah.
So the speed is just relative.
Yeah, the speed
about
would
who
be
has
relative.
the better programming code.
Or the faster processor.
I don't know.
Sorry, Ty. I'd like to digress a little.
Digress.
This past weekend, was Gymkhana Grid.
Oh, yes, okay.
So I got into a conversation with a gentleman who is on the upper end of the management of the Gymkhana Grid.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me that apparently from next year, World Rallycross, which is some of the invited cars that come to Gymkhana Grid, they are insisting, and we're talking about VW, Peugeot, Renault, all the guys that are currently involved with World Rallycross, they are insisting that by 2020, World Rallycross goes full electric.
What's wrong with that?
I don't see a problem.
I don't either.
You're just not going to have the noise.
No.
The what came from the conversation was that if the racing series isn't prepared to go at least halfway electric, then all the manufacturers are going to start pulling out because they don't see the return on the investment in racing petrol cars anymore.
Well, exactly.
So yeah,
it's a good point because I've always said that petrol cars are going to be relegated to the track, but maybe not mainstream production petrol cars. You're going to have like, you know, specialized manufacturers that actually manufacture racing cars that are ICE.
I would like to see hybrid racing cars. I think Formula One dabbled with it a while back.
Formula One is a hybrid.
Currently,
I'm talking like the full Le Mans LMP1 where you have the electrical system and a petrol system in one vehicle. That is where motorsport is going.
Current F1 cars are hybrids.
Yeah, they've got, what's it, DRS. Well, that's only enabled when they're within one
second. No, that's the wing. Yeah. That's not, it's got nothing to do with the engine. No, they are proper hybrids now.
They have battery hybrids. Systems with energy regeneration and power boosts and all sorts of things already.
I'm not up to scratch what's currently going on inside Formula 1 cars, but it's nice to know that even extreme forms of motorsport are starting to look at
well, you're
going
to have
future.
To, right? And the thinking for me behind that, I mean, and I'm no, you know, motorsport fanatic or expert, but if the car was invented first and motorsport was birthed by the motor vehicle, right?
No, well, motorsport started first time the second car rolled off the assembly line.
Okay. I see. Yes, absolutely. Because naturally, humans want to race, right?
You want to race,
exactly. So that's the thing. But I mean, if you think about it, like if you look at, you know, all these, you know, fancy kind of hot hatches that are born, a lot of them, and tell me if I'm wrong, yeah, they're born for the sport and then they become production cars. As a production car, then it becomes a sport vehicle. But let me tell you now, there are people who look at those cars and go, I want to drive one of those.
I'm going to shock George now, and I'm going to say that motorsport is a perfect place for full electrics. The power delivery is excellent. The only problem is, you know, between races, you're going to have like 6 hours recharging time. But between races,
you switch out the battery.
Yeah, there we go. If you can do
Well, in like Formula E, you basically switch out the entire car. They run, I think it's a 40-lap race, 20 laps in, they pull into the pits, guy gets out the car, gets into another car, and continues
but
on the
race. But the power delivery of an electric is perfect for motorsport. It's perfect for
instant
track use.
Instant
torque on demand. I mean, we've seen it now with the Park's Peak record car as well, Volkswagen.
Nobody has beat Tesla at that power delivery. No one. Not any electric car in the world has beat them. The Tesla Model S P100D with Ludacris, under 3 seconds, 0 to 100. No one has touched that. Perfect racing car.
Except it weighs 2.2 tons.
Yeah, well,
as soon as they sort out the battery.
As soon as they sort out the battery technology, it'll be.
Imagine how much faster it will
be. Faster. But yeah.
This ties back into what we were talking about earlier with VW relegating petrol engines and stuff to the scrap heap. If motorsports is going to survive,
they're going to have to work with what
all forms
got.
Of motorsports. At some point, they're going to have to either go halfway electric or full electric. Because that's
just the way it is.
Petrol engines will become a thing of the past.
We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Mad anyway.
Then, London. MotoGP riders can be classified as race finishers in future, even if they are not still on their motorcycles, if they cross their line separately. So you don't actually have to be on your bike to now finish the race.
So if you fall off the bike and you land on your feet, you can actually run the last couple of meters.
I'm not sure what the permutations are, but that's pretty much it.
Do both have to cross the line?
It says under previous rules, riders had to still be on their machines at the checkered flag to finish and score points, but the FIM's Grand Prix Commission decided a change was needed. There have been situations when, due to a crash, the rider and the machine have crossed the line separately, and the International Motorcycle Federation said in a statement, in future, the finish time will be determined by the first part of the rider or his motorcycle, whichever crosses the line.
The finish line
you can take your glove. Chuck it across the line.
Yeah, because you probably wonder if you have to be
isn't
attached.
Isn't there something in horse racing with a steeplechase or something like
that? Yeah, you have to be on the horse.
The rider has to be on the horse in order for the
horse
to have won.
That's how it used to be.
It's the same as canoeing, funny enough. You're not allowed to cross a finish line without your boat, even if it's in bits and pieces. So you see a lot of guys on the third day of Doozy would have wrapped their boat and really buggered it up, and they'll run the last day. So they don't even get in the water. It's a canoe race. But they don't even get in the water.
They're running.
They run to the finish line. They'll throw their boat in. They push it across. And that's, there we go. Thanks, you can have your medal.
Wow.
You
have to be in your boat, huh? Crazy.
We're racing. You have to be on your bike, on your horse or whatever. It doesn't help if you skid across the line in your butt.
Yeah, well, normally, I mean, not a lot of guys crash at the finish line because it's straight. Or do they?
Well,
I haven't seen too much. I honestly,
I've never seen it happen in all the years that I've been watching. Well, I've seen guys come off on corners, and I've seen guys, you know, the bike goes down, they lose the front wheel, the guy's sitting on the bike, skidding around a corner. But it's just always in the corners. It's never on a finish line.
Yeah. But strange. Anyway, I thought it was cool. Right, gents. When we were at the Festival of Motoring and we were at the NAMSA conference and we got insight into the South African Automotive Master Plan. And I see that there's now been some additional changes. So the South African Automotive Master Plan, the SAAM, has set out several objectives, including having more locally built cars and doubling employment in the sector by 2035. Now, we know from that 8% of our GDP comes out of the automotive industry. I think it's safe to say it is the biggest industry, one of the biggest contributors to GDP, in South Africa. And this really, really excites me.
7%.
We talk about all this nonsense about, you know, crime and blah, 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 blah. But the automotive industry is really driving things forward. And Minister of Trade and Industry Rob Davies said, to support the realization of the SAAM vision and associated objectives, several major policy amendments for the period post-2020, which is when the APDP, which is the current plan, present support framework concludes. And they've really put some good, I think it's really nice what they're doing in terms of some of the goals that they've set. So they want to achieve 1% of the global vehicle production by 2035. So that's increasing our output from about 600,000 units a year to about 1.4 million. Now that just bodes well, for our economy. And I think the knock-on effect from this is spectacular. So that was the first thing. Then they want to increase local content from 39% to 60%. They want to double the employment in the value chain from the current levels of about 240,000. They haven't put what the goal is here. And they want to achieve at least a level 4 BEE status from 2021. And then the final thing is to support to be based on the value addition rather than production sales value. Now, we know that the automotive industry, the knock-on effect in terms of the... what is it? The subsidiary or the secondary businesses or businesses that are
supporting
started,
businesses.
Supporting businesses that are started out of this. And this just this kind of stuff excites me because it just makes me believe that much more in the industry that we work in.
If the automotive industry in South Africa fell apart, our economy would be stuffed because the manufacturing plants are a big part of our GDP. So the fact they want to increase local production means they want to probably put more plants in, create longer and faster assembly lines, maybe, you know, because it says increase local content from 39% to 60%, which means make the stuff,
Absolutely.
You know, which is brilliant. And I've seen a couple of billboards around town that say buy South African. You know, if all South Africans went on this buy South African move, we increase local production of cars here, we just supported our own economy, stop importing so much, we'd be a thriving economy, you know, into the future.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, if you look at the quality of vehicles that we obviously that we're putting out, and I mean, you guys know what's manufactured here. It is. This is the one of the backbone. Well, this could be the. It is the backbone of our economy, and the fact that there's this massive plan to, you know, to make South Africa better by doing this. Just, you know, really, it warms my heart, especially at this time of year when we know that there's things like this that are happening, because we don't often get a lot of good news, but Yeah, I mean, you know, like to double our unit sales. Do you think car prices will come down in South Africa if that's the case?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. Let's just understand car prices in relation to what it is.
Okay.
Anything's price is a demand and supply intersection. So you can't for a second say, oh, this price is going to come down over time, that price is going to go up over time. It depends on the demand and supply.
Okay.
You know, so that's not something you can predict very easily.
But okay. Noted.
But sorry, I took the wind out of yourself.
No, you've taken the wind out of yourself, but I actually just wonder if I think about that, because it is. So if there's no demand, price will come down because...
Yeah, there's massive amounts of demand for a Hyundai Tucson, and
yes.
And then there's enough supply because there's enough production plants and all that stuff.
Mm.
Then the price will tend to, you know, to be lower because you know, supply is meeting demand.
Yeah, they're meeting units.
If there's massive amounts of demand and no supply, guess what's going to happen to the price? It's going to go up.
Yeah.
Willing buyer, willing seller. That's just the way economics works.
So, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good thing? Do you think it's, I mean, obviously people are, there's going to be a lot of money poured into this, but this is something that we could really, really become, you know, great at. This could make us great again.
You know, we have a number of factories upcountry and down on the coast, PE side of the world, where we are manufacturing vehicles, which we don't see in this country.
Yeah.
Straight for export. Mm. I think it's the Ford Raptor.
Yeah,
is now being made.
Ford Raptors made in Silverton already.
Yeah, we've got
BMWs,
BMW 3 Series.
Yeah,
this is for global consumption. Mm. It's not for local consumption. Yeah. So,
not the 3 Series anymore. The X3,
BAIC, bike.
Yeah.
They opening up a massive assembly plant for the bike cars, which will be going to China.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that yes, if there's a few guys that are doing it. You know, we can have every single automotive manufacturer in the world could have a plant here and be making cars.
Yeah.
But
I think that's the thing. It's about putting a stake in the ground and saying we're going to become the best automotive manufacturers.
Assembler
that we can.
As
that
long
we
as
can.
The unions don't get involved at all.
Well, listen, we're always going to have that, aren't we? But
look, whatever plans can be implemented to stimulate the automotive industry will stimulate the economy, and that can only be good for South Africa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the long and the short of it.
So there you go, Jaguar Land Rover. It's time to open up an assembly plant.
Yes, then you can slash your XE prices by like 15% as well.
No, that doesn't necessarily mean that. Careful with this price story.
No, the thing is that we know about there are the manufacturers who build cars in South Africa, if they're bringing cars from overseas, there is a bit of a difference.
Export credit,
yes.
That's it.
So, like Jaguar Land Rover, they've got no manufacturing facilities in South Africa, so they're paying a premium to bring those cars in from overseas.
Yeah.
And that gets transferred down the
line.
It's not only the premium brands. I mean, Kia has the same problem.
Mm.
Yep. So, guys, it's time to start building factories.
Yep.
Manufacture locally.
And not SKD or semi knockdown or completely knockdown kits. Build them from scratch.
Right.
There you go.
What do you think? Do a lot of guys just bring in specific bits and pieces of the vehicle and then they kind of get assembled? Yeah,
that's the local content requirement
that
they're talking about there.
Yeah. Well, you know, hats off to Rob Davies, and I think it's a great plan, and hopefully it just makes us a little bit better place to live in. Right, guys, we're going to chat about this quickly, but there's a lot of talk about, you know, you can make your fuel last longer. Can you?
Yes.
Can you make it last longer?
Yes. So two rules. Three. Don't brake unnecessarily. Don't accelerate too hard and drop your speed.
And just like that.
Yeah.
Easy peasy. In the conversation.
No, not really. There are other things as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's, you know, make sure that your vehicle is maintained properly.
Yeah,
we actually have a few videos out on Auto Trader's YouTube channel where we tell people this is how you can save fuel. Mm. Do these things, and you can, you know, you could bring your fuel consumption down by at least 2%.
Mm.
You know, it's all about the harshness of your driving style. If the car is maintained properly, even things down to making sure that your tires are inflated correctly can have a negative impact on your fuel economy.
Yeah. Things like packing a roof rack.
Oh, yes.
Anything. Massive drag.
Yeah.
Massive
anything drag that changes the car's aerodynamics will have
a... There goes to our surfboard.
Surfboards aerodynamic, George.
Even those.
When I tie it down, it actually creates downward pressure on the vehicle.
You need to turn it upside down.
It is upside down.
Yeah, exactly. And you get some plonkers who have the thing facing up and then the car can't take
it. I had a mate's dad who went to Durban once and he thought he was a waxy and he actually was waxing his board and everyone was looking at him going, what is this knob doing? And he was actually waxing the wrong side of the board. He waxed the underside and not the top side.
We're like, it's because he wanted to do some half pipe maneuvers in that seat.
Yeah. So obviously, there's a point that says don't let the car idle. If you're stuck in heavy traffic for more than 15 seconds, rather switch the car off.
Almost new cars have got that facility built.
Oh, they do. Hey, yeah, they switch off automatically. Huh? Engage cruise control if you've got it.
Windows up and aircon off. My word. Okay.
Yeah, you're going to be hot, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, only on level or levelish roads.
I'd say if you have to choose, use the aircon over opening the windows. Yeah. Probably much more drag with the windows open.
Yes.
Mythbusters actually did a series on that, or an episode on that.
And it came was basically under 15 miles an hour, which is about 30-40 k's an hour.
It doesn't make it a difference.
Keep your windows open.
Yeah.
Over that, windows up, aircon on.
Yeah. And you get a lot of Uber drivers who don't want to use the aircon, all their windows are open. Like, that's going to help.
Oh, well. You can go and check out some of the videos on AutoTrader on the YouTube channel.
We have plenty of info on that.
And do you fill your tank up, or do you reckon you fill it halfway? Does that make a massive difference?
No.
Well, weight does make a difference in a car's fuel consumption. There's so many filling stations on the way. You'll see people going to the filling station and then that click, click, click. They're trying to put the last 100 millilitres of liquid into. There's no point.
Yes, George, but not all of us have big Land Rovers with 90-litre fuel tanks. Some of us drive little Toyotas that take 40 litres at a time. And every time you swipe that card, it costs money.
Yeah, but I don't understand how that makes any sense with the last 100 mils that you're trying to put in. It's cost you the same anyway. Makes no difference. Whether you swipe it twice or whether you swipe it once, the cost is the same.
Fill your tank to the first click.
Fill it
to the first click. The only thing I would say, though, is be careful. If you get to the petrol garage and you can see one of the tankers is there and they're busy filling the tanks, drive away.
Yeah.
Because when they're busy filling the tanks, all of the sludge that's at the bottom of the tanks gets churned up and it will get thrown into your car.
Okay.
And also, they say early morning.
Yeah, early morning, early morning because the fuel's cooler.
The density is higher.
These are things you can take into account. I think it's all pseudoscience.
Semantics.
Just generally, you don't want to fill up at a petrol station that is just had.
You also don't really want to fill up at a petrol station in the middle of nowhere that hasn't seen a tanker in the last 2 months, because fuel gets stale as well.
Oh, does it, eh?
Yeah.
Does it go off?
It goes off.
It does.
The volatile components evaporate and it actually changes the combustion properties of the fuel.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Well, on that note, what fuel have you been putting in your Subaru that you've been driving?
Too much, for starters.
You are in the Forester, right?
Yeah.
Subaru Forester?
Well, it actually went back home last week.
Okay.
Yes, it was the brand new Forester.
And?
It's a really nice car, but with one glaring flaw.
Which is?
The drivetrain.
Okay.
Let's
talk about the new car first.
It's an all-new design. It doesn't really look like it. Mm-hmm. But if you compare the two, the fourth and the new generation, if you can put them next to each other and you can actually see, then you can actually see the changes.
Okay.
They've concentrated very much on making it more comfortable and making it handle better and making it more spacious and improving the sight lines to the outside of the car and so on. And in all those respects, they have been successful. But unfortunately, for the moment, at least for the next year, South Africa will only get that new Forester with a 2-litre, normally aspirated engine, and exclusively mated to a constantly variable transmission. Now, the power output looks okay, 115 kilowatts and 196 newton meters, but then you realize it's a pretty big, heavy car.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the combination of that engine and the CVT means that the performance doesn't match the promise delivered by the very sporty and well-sorted handling. That's the main problem. Now, in mitigation, the most expensive New Forester, the top spec one, still comes in under $500,000. Okay. So it's very good value for money.
Yeah.
And the big thing with these new Subarus is the EyeSight driving aid.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically two stereo cameras mounted on top of the windscreen,
yeah,
or right at the top edge of the windscreen, which constantly monitors the road conditions around you, and it does things like lane departure warning and adaptive cruise control, which all works very well. But there's another little bit of a glitch there. The car has adaptive cruise control, and it can look at the lane markings. Why didn't they integrate this with some level of lane keeping assistance, not just lane departure warning, where the car would steer for itself?
So, yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, lane departure warning preceded, the assisted
exactly
part. So they're probably just behind with the technology.
No, but the thing is, they were one of the first to do this. And in America, you can get these cars.
Wasn't BMW the first? With the
7 Series,
yeah.
But Subaru has, Subaru is actually the EyeSight bit of the system, which uses the cameras, has been in refinement, been in development for about the last 15 years already, and they have the technology. And then there's another strange omission with this emphasis on improved sight lines to the outside. Why is there no blind spot monitoring? I mean, it's such a simple, stupid thing to integrate. Similarly, this mid-spec car I drove had one problem as well. No parking sensors in the front. And the bonnet is lifted, the bonnet is raised, so you can actually see the bonnet from the driver's seat, mm-hmm. but you still can't judge where the car really ends when you want to park.
Sure.
And in contrast, there's a beautiful high-resolution camera for reversing.
Mm.
So let's call it.
It's right. It's like it's those fine little details. Like if you're doing it at the back, why not just do it at the front?
Do it at the front.
Yeah. Exactly.
Especially with the cameras there already.
Yeah. And from a looks point of view, I mean, you know, Subaru is a very, very different car.
Yeah,
it's never been a pretty car.
No. I think this New Forest actually looks very good.
Okay.
They have butched it up. It's much more of a boy car now than it was.
Okay.
And the thing is, I might be criticizing it for its lack of performance, but in reality, the majority of Forester buyers have never given a flying
hoot
about straight line performance.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the historical sales figures of the Turbo Foresters, for instance, they make up a tiny percentage of the total sales. So I think for most Forester buyers, the fact that it's kind of limp-wristed doesn't really matter, because in all other respects, it's a really, really, really nice car. It has probably the side of a Volvo, the most comfortable seats I've encountered in a car in a long time.
Sure, okay.
Brilliant ride quality, great driving dynamics. You know, it's very sure-footed, and it's actually really, really comfortable and spacious. And I think those are the core values for a Forester. And that's what people really buy a Forester for.
Great boot space.
Fantastic.
Fantastic boot space. Yeah. And
lots of cabin space as well. I mean, I'm almost 6'4".
Yeah.
And I can sit behind myself.
How's the sound?
Of the car or the audio system?
No, the audio system. And who cares what the car sounds like?
Well, when it becomes electric, it won't be a sound.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I see it's got, what is it, 9 Harman Kardon?
Yeah, that's only on the top spec. That's only on the top spec one. But even this mid-spec one has really nice audio quality. Nice user-friendly touchscreen system as well, which is also brand new, and it works really well. So on the whole, it's a very good car and it's very good value. Just don't expect it to go fast.
Okay, so what, 8 out of 10 maybe?
No, I'd say 7.
7.
I'd say 7. Right. Unfortunately, that transmission just sucks every little bit of joy out of it.
Okay.
Video review will be up this week.
And fantastic. The written review will be out tomorrow.
Okay, fantastic. Well, if you want to check that out, you can log on to Auto Trader News and Reviews, and this information will be there. And just before we kick off, before we wrap up here, I don't know about you guys, but there's something about the smell of a new car that just, I don't know, it's a smell unlike anything else. I think when you get a new car, like you sit in it for the first time.
In the Landwind that I tested last week,
yes.
It was chemically treated leather.
Oh, really?
That was the new car smell.
No, well, so I mean,
well, you know where that new car smell comes from, eh?
Well, it's from the microfibers in the.
Well, it's the
adhesives,
the leather, yeah, and the plastics,
yes,
that actually secrete toxins, from those components. Into the air and leave a car in the sun, and the only thing that causes it is the sun.
Okay.
The sun causes it to leach out. Leave the car in the sun for long enough and that new car smell will go away.
Well, Ford are inventing a technology to eliminate this new car smell because apparently the Chinese don't like it.
What do they like? Have you smelled a new Chinese car? Most of the new Chinese cars smell like
Jim Keen.
Yeah.
I haven't.
With the exception of Havel's, pretty much every other Chinese car I've ever driven smells like contact adhesive.
Yeah. Gen-chem. But Gen-chem. That being said, BMW, Volvo, they all have, I think even Citroën.
Audi started it.
Citroën, they all have like a little
department.
In the cubbyhole, there's like a little pod that connects to the air conditioner. And that sort of pumps a fragrance, and you can get different pods, different fragrances. A Springfield, it's like a hair commercial,
Nestle coffee machine.
Yeah.
I just find it ironic that Ford is not trying to eradicate the new car smell for China. Audi in the 1990s, but Audi in the 1990s actually established a department to research the optimal new car smell. Because when you get into a new car, that's one of the first things you notice. And if the car smells nice, your impression of the car's quality will change.
Yeah,
no, it's true. But we are in the West.
We are in the West. Interesting. Well, gentlemen, on that note, thank you very much. It's been a phenomenal year. We wish to those that tune in and listen and those that download our podcast, thank you very much. We're happy you have a super super holiday, awesome festive season. Be safe on the road, and we will catch you guys all in, 2019?
January.
Yeah, January 2019. So until then, we shall see you.
This is CliffCentral.com.